10. It's not quite as bad as it sounds. Raymond had promoted Ken Cohen as Vice President of Public Affairs at the time of the Mobil merger. His predecessor, Tony Atkus, had been a workmanlike hand, but I think the perception was that we needed to have a little different view, an executive involved recalled. At the time, Cohen was a 48-year-old in-house lawyer with no direct professional background in lobbying, media, or public relations. There wasn't a long list of candidates, the executive remembered. Being the head of public affairs for Exxon is probably not viewed as one of the most desirable jobs in the world. The Exxon culture just doesn't generate a lot of people who would, A, be very good at it, and B, like it. The perception was that Ken was reasonably articulate and would bring a different view. Exxon in-house lawyers had founded the Public Affairs Department. The corporation was heavily regulated in the United States and abroad, so its lawyers often had the most direct knowledge of the public policy issues that affected the bottom line. Still, Cohen did not possess an obvious background for corporate image management. In his previous position, he had served as a senior lawyer at Exxon Chemical Company, a division that litigated continually with regulators and environmental campaigners. Cohen had been conditioned to think that anything he or other Exxon executives said in public could be used against them in a court of law. He inherited a public affairs department whose core media strategy was to say no comment in 50 different languages, as an in-house joke had it. Cohen kept a black notebook binder on a shelf in his second-floor office on the Irving campus. He distributed copies to members of ExxonMobil's management committee and other senior executives. The first page carried the title Public Policy Issues. A list of about 24 subjects followed, from climate change to energy pricing to alternative fuels. The management committee updated and approved the list annually as part of ExxonMobil's strategic planning process. Cohen's aides wrote a summary of the current policy debate under each policy heading and then a description of ExxonMobil's position. Cohen also reviewed the notebook's contents with a special public policy committee of the corporation's board of directors, which met 9 times each year. If the corporation's management ever changed its thinking about a public policy matter, the change would be vetted through the strategic planning process and then inscribed into Ken Cohen's notebook and reviewed with the board committee. Issues managers and issues teams, some in Irving, some in Washington, some in Fairfax, and some in Houston, monitored and updated the public policy debates throughout the year, reporting to Cohen and through him to the management committee. The issues managers ensured that the language used worldwide to describe ExxonMobil's position on any public policy question was consistent. The language on PowerPoint slides presented to Chinese Communist Party functionaries in Beijing about, say, the regulation of ethanol was essentially the same as the language on PowerPoint slides left behind in the offices of first-term congressmen in Washington. ExxonMobil lobbied the same way it ran refineries. It employed a top-down, global system vetted at the highest levels of the corporation, and it expected all of its managers to follow that system. The issues management system, as it was known, displayed ExxonMobil's signature internal discipline, but it could also be as rigid, slow, and inflexible as a Soviet 5-year agricultural plan. The specific policy positions that emerged in the final draft of the Black Binder were sometimes vague and abstract, and might be of limited use to a former senator under contract to the ExxonMobil K Street office to sway votes in a Capitol Hill legislative conference. Public policy and legislative deal-making were fluid, adaptive processes, more improvisation than Exxon's engineering-led culture knew how to manage. Public Affairs dispatched an internal newsletter on the 5th of every month describing what political and policy developments it had been monitoring since the 10th of the previous month. Its analysis was often out of date. In the lobbyist's art, personal relationships and spontaneous compromises shaped success. Ken Cohen had grown up in a placid Midwest community in the post-war era as one of 4 sons in an achievement-oriented, education-driven family. His grandfather had fled anti-Semitic pogroms in Ukraine and immigrated to the United States. The network of relations on which he relied drew him to Illinois. He settled in iconic Peoria and opened a dry goods store. Cohen's father attended Northwestern University, and became a medical doctor. Ken also enrolled at Northwestern, but left after his third year and enrolled at Baylor University's law school in Waco, Texas. Baylor was one of a relatively small number of law schools willing to accept students who had not finished their college degree. Cohen loved the law, particularly its pedagogy, but he concluded that he should practice before taking up a teaching career. He joined Exxon in 1977 at 26 and never left. He was a mild-looking man of modest height, with a full head of salt-and-pepper hair which he parted near the middle, a choice that gave him a slightly old-fashioned air. He owned a condominium in the upscale Turtle Creek area of Dallas. He was married to a former colleague from the Exxon Public Affairs Department, Darcy A. Bundy, who in mid-life entered into the interior home design business in Dallas and in the town where the couple summered, Kennebunk, Maine. Cohen did not think of himself as possessing a political ideology, but as he stayed and rose at Exxon, he adopted the corporation's official skepticism toward regulators and its preferences for free market policies. He was quiet and calm, professional, but intensely competitive. He could master a new subject quickly, and he organized concise briefings about public policy issues for his colleagues in management. Like many in the corporation's upper ranks who had lived through the post-Valdez years, Cohen had developed a defensive posture. The attitude he and his colleagues projected came across as arrogance, but if it was that, it was conditioned by mistrust of outsiders, especially of environmental campaigners and journalists. "We've had our hearts broken so many times," Cohen told his colleagues.